Welcome to Transitions with Ruth Ann Rehm McCaffrey.
Hi, I'm Santia, and I'm here with Ruth Ann. Hi, Ruth Ann.
Hi, Santia.
And we have a special guest today, Dr. Mishko. Hello, Dr. Mishko.
Hello, ladies.
And we're going to be talking about some transitions, and Dr. Mishko is going to tell us a little bit about what he does.
I'm a chiropractor, and I specialize in what's called atlas orthogonal chiropractic procedures, which has to do with aligning the head and the first two vertebrae below the head, the atlas and the axis. And I'm board certified in that, and that's a specialized procedure that requires minimal force but specific x-rays to accomplish that. Also, I have a background in scoliosis evaluation and treatment, as well as chiropractic pediatrics.
Thank you. So you have this amazing background,
right?
And you're going to give us a little bit of some information about how the mind and the body works together. So, Ruth Ann, did you have a question?
Well,
yeah,
I'm thinking, because we talk about transitions on this show, but we don't have the information that has to do with how the body can be a major factor in managing transitions or influencing them. So it's especially interesting that you have a specialty in that. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you...
Well, I think... Go ahead.
Nope. Good.
I think it's critical for... we all know that the brain controls the whole body. Everything from the ability to sweat, to breathe, for the heart to beat, for you to digest food, and for the ones we think of most obviously are moving your muscles or feeling a sensation. Interestingly enough, in this country, most of our studies on nerve injuries and spinal cord injuries were looking at dysfunction of muscles and sensory function when there's a spinal cord or spinal nerve injury. In Russia, the majority of their studies were looking more at organ dysfunction when there's been a neck or a back injury or a nerve or a spinal cord injury.
Okay.
So the place that I specialize in the spine is often called the brain-body connection. It's where all the impulses come out of the brain down this thing we call the spinal cord, which is this long cable, which is just essentially the brain becoming small enough to fit through these series of bones. These bones called the vertebrae in the spine normally protect the spine and allow for movement, but often people get in different types of accidents where they're fallen or they've been in a car wreck or a wrestling injury like I had in high school, or just sleep in a bad position, use too big of pillows, watch TVs in bed, and they take these segments that are supposed to shift and move, and they're completely freely movable, a few of them, and they get into a position that actually insults the spinal cord where it would normally protect it. Now it's insulting it. The insult can be as frank pressure from a disc or from a bone. It can be blockage of cerebral spinal fluid flowing around the spinal cord and around the brain. But if you can get those bones back in the right position, then the freedom of expression for a human being really is enhanced, because the impulses from the brain get to travel down the spinal cord out to the rest of the body. And did you ever go to the body exhibit that was in Seattle?
Oh, that was amazing.
I did not get to see that.
It's fascinating, because the dissectionists, the people that were doing the dissection were phenomenal. I mean, they had a complete nervous system intact, laid out, and you could see the nerves going from into the spinal cord, off the spinal cord, all the way down to the fingertips,
wow,
all the way down around to the ribs and the lungs. And it was just, it's very impressive. Looking at those different exhibits, we had very good anatomists at our school, and we spent a lot of time in the cadaver lab. But I would tell you, if you could spend time in that exhibit for 3 or 4 weeks, work was so superior to anything that I think is going on around the world, that it was just really enlightening to see.
And beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful to see the displays. I wasn't quite sure what to expect. It was just gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that for me was made me go back and do a little bit more studies with anatomy, just because I didn't realize I had people. Some of those bodies that took a year to prepare per body.
Oh my goodness.
They'd have like two dissectionists on each one, but they were just, you know, it's really, for me, if you didn't understand chiropractic or the anatomy of the body, go to that exhibit and all of a sudden you're going, wow, it's just, you know, that controls everything your body does.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I've read somewhere is that every cell in the body has some function connected to the brain. So is each cell then ultimately the link up with the brain?
Well, they are all linked up with the brain, and they don't act independently.
Okay.
I've read somewhere that there's no cells are more than 3 cells away from a nerve ending. And no cells act independent of the nervous system. The nervous system is controlling everything that's going on in the body.
Okay.
All the subconscious that we don't even think about, from watering your eye mm-hmm. to digesting food to right. putting the proper enzymes and the proper acid into the stomach, depending mm-hmm. on what food you eat. If you get cut and start to bleed, immediately the brain sends impulses back and forth. It's a two-way street. So you're getting an impulse back to the brain saying we're losing blood. There's a threat of an infection. The skin's been broken, and the body will immediately send white blood cells, infection fighters, and platelets, and coagulate the blood and do what it's supposed to do. But that all happens because the brain-body connection is intact. When that's not intact, you can have all kinds of problems.
What are some of the major kind of lifestyle or life behavioral issues that come up with your clients?
Mostly, I think...
Or patients.
Patients come in and they have... If they're coming to a natural health care provider, they usually are a little healthier. So they're usually a little bit more athletic. They're a little bit more into exercise. Typically, they want to eat better, or they do eat better. But you still get the patients that are on a number of medications, that aren't getting exercise, that aren't maybe thinking positive, mm-hmm. and not eating organic food. Mm-hmm. So you deal with both sides of it. It's obviously easier to work with a patient that physically has other things in line. They're mentally, spiritually, and they're getting good nutrition and good exercise. Those people always heal faster. Age doesn't seem to matter as much. I think the length of the problem matters, but if I've had patients come in that were in their 50s, 60s, and 70s and heal just as fast as a 20-year-old okay. once the problem is cleared up.
Okay.
That's promising.
That is.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one of the things that that we wondered about when we were talking before the show started is, what about other obstacles, or you just mentioned spiritual or emotional kinds of challenges going on. How does that affect the brain's functioning and the ability to be healthy?
Well, there are a lot of challenges, especially in this place and time. We're dealing with a pretty polluted environment at this point. So it seems to me now, I've said this before, even 10 years ago, that I have to do more to get patients well than I ever had to. Mm. You have to alert them about what to eat, what not to eat, what to stay away from, what's good food, to get exercise. The water in the air are more and more questionable. Every decade, it looks a little worse and a little worse. There's a lot of influences from overpopulation and over-farming and overuse of pesticides, insecticides. Those are a big issue. People that have a positive attitude seem to be able to overcome that easier. That's probably no substitute for a positive attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, I started doing research on there's been a lot of research coming in on the water fluoridation programs in the United States. We're one of the few advanced countries that still fluoridates the water. And it's really an interesting subject, because they've identified fluoride as a neurotoxin that's taking IQ points off of our children and off of the adults as well.
Oh, no.
And it's an interesting subject because it is considered a developmental neurotoxin. And the peculiar part about it is most neurotoxins we're subjected to because industry puts them out there, not that we're choosing to, but with the fluoride, we're actually choosing to put it in our water, not necessarily mm-hmm. you or me, but our city council or somebody that's in the government. So we're actually choosing to put a developmental neurotoxin in our water. The mathematics in that I've looked at, they're saying if you can lower IQ, which it's the studies, there's about 30 saying that it's lowering IQ in our children by about 7 to 8 points.
Oh, my gosh.
And based on that, we're saying, the mathematicians are saying that you're doubling the number of people that need that have diminished capacity and need some kind of assistance in the society. And you're losing about, you're cutting your geniuses or your creative and critical thinkers down by 25%.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was like, to me, it's like, you remember thalidomide?
Mm-hmm.
We were told it was okay, like DES was another drug. We were told it was okay by our agencies and our government. And thalidomide, it was the one that caused all the very bad deformities, mm-hmm. flippers, and the kids would have flippers instead of arms and legs.
Right.
But I think if that drug was causing loss of IQ points, I don't think it would have ever been taken off the market. Because it's such an insidious thing,
yeah.
They can't say where did it come from. But the science is there that the fluoride in the water is bad. But the process now is it's a political football because it's a huge moneymaker for the people that have this industrial fluoride that's waste that they sell. And I've talked to the Washington State Department of Health on it in our city, and they're willing to admit, you know, the long arms of the fluoride industry is reaching down and directing things more than the science is.
What about bottled water? I mean, and the
kind bottled that
you
water,
just, you know, the yeah. companies that bring water to your...
Okay. Bottled water, if it's done with reverse osmosis and a good filtration system, which some of it is, or if you get spring water from like an artesian well, that's
right.
not fluoridated, then it doesn't have it in. If you try to take fluoride out through distillation, it actually concentrates it.
Oh, my.
The other factors that really come into play with fluoride that make it such a bad thing is all the studies are saying there's too much fluoride in the environment as it is. It's mm-hmm. very abundant from our smelting and from our phosphate fertilizer industry, like Monsanto and Dow and mm-hmm. all those people. And they have to have a place to get rid of it. And this is, it kind of solves a problem for them. But in the meantime, it's really doing damage. I mean, there's no doubt about that. There's 30 studies, I think, showing loss of IQ. There's other studies showing cancer and osteosarcomas go up if you get it. The stack of information on fluoride in water fluoridation is probably this high, you know, 2 feet high, that's coming out of refereed, unbiased journals saying it shouldn't be in there. And all the stuff that actually is saying that it should is coming out of... It's not from refereed journals, and it's not. It's just the fluoride industry trying to hang on to this multi-million-dollar industry they have.
I remember when I was a kid having fluoride liquid applied to my teeth,
mm-hmm.
and I'm, you know, that's yeah. a while back.
Well, fluoride
is that
liquid
different than
it's that's a pharmaceutical grade, but that's still very toxic. Fluoride even not fluoride drops or fluoride on your teeth is topical, so you're not ingesting it into the body most of it, but. That's controversial, too.
Mm-hmm.
So the dentist will still say they think they should have that choice, but most of your dentists don't want water fluoridation because they know it shouldn't go. It isn't meant to be ingested. It has no
mm-hmm.
value.
Mm-hmm.
But that whole program's been going on like 60 years,
right.
and it's hard. It's kind of like the Flat Earth Society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there was people up until the 1940s that actually believed the Earth was flat
mm-hmm.
because they were taught that for so long. And I think the fluoride has sort of the same thing. You have the... kind of the flat earth, then you have the people that don't want to lose credibility because they've supported it for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the people that could be in the government that don't even want to look at it because it's another subject they don't have time for.
Mm-hmm.
So they want somebody to tell them what to do, and they're going to listen to the, you know, the public
so
health inspector.
So we've got these challenges like that. You have the challenges with people, choices that they're making, and then challenges that are made for them like the fluoride. So how does that affect the work that you do to help people make healthy transitions or move from sickness to health?
It gives me another thing to think about. It gives me, you know, how much have we lost, and can you alert them about, you know, the water? And
mm-hmm.
The fluoride's a hard one because once it's put in the water, it's hard to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're an average person, you're not going to go out and buy filtered water.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as transitions, most of them happen pretty reflexively once it's cleared. I mean, I've had patients that will come in and they're physically beat up and sick, and you get them working properly, can get the nervous system working properly again. I've seen patients will, you know, not only do they feel better, but their relationships work better.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to, when you're walking around feeling sick all the time or tired or run down,
mm-hmm.
we've all been there one time or another, and we're less tolerant, we're more mm-hmm. grouchy, and, you know, we're harder on our dog, our kids, and our spouse.
Well, it's hard to think about anything other than pain when you're in it.
It is.
So the work that you do then, you can really see that reflecting in their whole life. Or what they will report back.
Yeah, we really can.
How they treat you.
Yeah, you really, I mean, I've had those types of cards sent to me that, you know, you think you've changed my life or you've helped my family. And it isn't just getting rid of the pain, it's getting the function back into the relationship because they feel good enough again.
Right.
And, you know, when a parent has a sick child too, one that can't move forward, that's, as you know, as a mother or a father, you're going to be, your whole life is consumed in getting that child back on track.
Mm-hmm.
And when their nervous system starts to work properly, when the brain-body connection is intact and working properly, health is almost the naturally occurring thing. You don't have to work for it hardly at all.
Mm-hmm.
But when that's interrupted and they've got disturbed nerves going to their sinuses or pinched nerves going down an arm or around to their thyroid, then you're going to have dysfunction of those organs, dysfunction of the immune system. Mm-hmm. And relieving that pressure allows the body to heal itself. And it's just about taking care of that brain-body connection and letting the body heal itself.
What's the youngest patient you've worked with?
I've worked with 5-6-day-old kids.
Oh, you're kidding. Yeah, oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
Yeah, I've had one patient that was born in the hospital, and the doctor was late getting there, and the nurses did not want her to have the baby without the doctor there. When she should, they should just let it go, but they had her close her legs and tried to keep the baby in.
Oh, no.
And it took about an hour of her holding back, and she shouldn't have done it, but she didn't know better. And the baby kept getting, the contraction were pushing the baby's head and the neck and squeezing them together.
Uh-huh.
And the baby stopped breathing like 6-7 times in the first couple hours. They got to keep reviving it.
Oh, my gosh.
And so they asked me to come down to the hospital, and we were able to just traction the head and the neck. And it was an interesting case because typically the adjusting I do, there's no popping at all. There's no, you know, but as we traction the head and the neck, everything went pop, 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 pop.
Oh.
And I think the baby has never stopped. The baby's actually 20 years old now.
Okay.
Never stopped breathing since then. And the baby's been very, the child's been healthy and the kid's been healthy.
And the person, yeah. Wow. So, wow. You can really see you're working.
And I don't think you necessarily have to adjust every child or every person, but they should be checked, especially if there's health problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've checked a lot of children that were fine. The neck was clear and the bones are moving fine. And we just leave them alone. We'll say, bring them back if they fall down hard or their behavior changes or if they're not digesting their food well, or they're not sleeping well. If they're fussy and twisting from side to side, and you know, have a fitful sleep, then usually you're going to find that there's a spinal issue there, or maybe a food issue, and that could be related to what the baby's given as far as mother's milk, or what the mother's eating, or what the formulas are.
Okay, interesting. How about the oldest patient you worked with?
Oldest patient I worked with. Oh, you know what? I think the oldest patient I just worked with just passed away.
Oh, okay.
Not because of anything I did,
though. Not because of you.
Yeah. But she was 92, she was really a sweet, sweet lady.
Yeah.
And she passed away, and it was an interesting story as well, but she had a curvature. She came into me, and her curvature was 85 degrees.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's like a right angle, and she had two curves that were over 80 degrees.
Wow.
And she responded very well to chiropractic, and she came in and saw me the last 20 years. But when you get a patient that old, you're not going to get that curve straightened out.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to make them more comfortable. You might be able to decrease it slightly, but she was usually doing pretty well. But I've treated even older patients than that. I was working at one time in a rest home just as a charity trip down to Mexico, and we worked with a lot of patients in a rest home, and they're tough to work with because you get them feeling better and you get their spine moving a little better, and then they go lay in bed for 8 hours and get up and sit in their chair for 12 hours and watch TV, and you come back a couple days later, look at them going, I couldn't really even tell I worked on them.
Right,
you know,
So
they were, and that was a really unique situation there. It was a guy put together, it was a nonprofit charity in Mexico. It was centered in Arizona, and they had put together where they had an orphanage, a senior care center, and a domestic and orphanage for pets.
Oh, hey.
And all three of them played off each other pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
They liked having
like
all.
Like that,
yeah,
sure.
And it was called the Rainbow Warriors. And
they did
some nice work.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's certainly wonderful for little kids to have older people to pay attention to them, and pets paying attention to both.
Mm-hmm.
That was
the idea. They played off each other, and they took care of each other, and the kids made the older people feel younger, and the younger people, the older people got to take care of the kids a little bit.
Sure.
So it worked pretty well.
Yeah. The dogs and cats got to climb all over them.
Yeah.
How interesting. Well, your work is certainly interesting, and I've benefited from it. So
thank you, Ruthann.
I appreciate the chance for you.
You've been a pleasure to work on. You're always bringing a smile and positive attitude with you every time I've ever seen you, no matter how bad you were hurting.
He's seen me in some situations, like the time that my car was getting away from me and I rolling by itself, and I jumped in and rescued the car from hitting a neighbor's boat. That took several sessions.
Yeah, yeah.
Get my hip back, but anyway.
You do pretty well, though. You're better than most people that are over 40.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, bless your heart. Well, I really appreciate having you on the show today. Is there anything else, any kind of particular words of wisdom that you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
You know, I just heard this quote. I think I showed it to you the other day when you were in the office, and it was one of my favorite quotes I ever heard, and it was, work for a cause, not for applause. Live to express, not to impress. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Very good. Well, you've impressed us
today. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, ladies. My pleasure.
To get in touch with Dr. Mishko, you can reach him at 253-752-7522. He is located on Bridgeport in University Place. His business is called Innate Wellness Chiropractic and Rehab Center. You can also go to his website at www.innatewellnessinc.com.